Hey everyone, welcome back to part three of Why I Am a Christian. I am going to just sort of pick up where I left off. So I was talking about how I ended up in college and I had a bit of a fragile faith because I started with kind of fundamentalist beliefs. And I'm just remembering I wanted to make one comment about a comment I got on the last video. Someone wrote in, saying that, just pointing out that I happen to have these, quote unquote, powerful supernatural experiences that seemingly confirm the beliefs that I was inculcated with. And, that if that's what kept me as a Christian, then that, implying that could seem weak or whatever. And my thought on that is any sort of supernatural experience is simply more data that needs to be analyzed like any other data. If you find a random artifact out in the woods, it's data that you need to then analyze. It could be something that was dropped by a modern day person that looks old. It could be something actually old. You don't throw it away until you know more about it, but you don't make assumptions about it either. And that's exactly how I treat supernatural data. In fact, one thing I get frustrated with is I think in some of these discussions, especially among Christians, they want to divide like sort of hard data versus other reasons for being a Christian. And you can do that for a sort of practical purpose, but like in the end, it's all data. Like in the end, this part has to do with my overall epistemology. In the end, I am this person sitting inside this body. That's how it feels, at least, right? That's our sort of experience. And I'm just taking in data. I'm taking in sensory data, and that sensory data includes the five senses, but also everything I experience, period, which includes purported supernatural experiences. So I think I should just treat it as data and compare it and run it through the same battery of tests, any sort of data. So I mean, two of the main questions you're going to ask about any sort of supernatural experience, quote unquote, is the nature of it, and comparing it to other experiences in your own life, trying to get to the nature directly in your analysis. And then a secondary thing that probably is even a better tool is sort of a comparative analysis of what does my experience tell me, and how do I describe it, and how does that compare to people who are not religious and have powerful, quote unquote, emotional experiences, or how does it compare to other religions? And then, yeah, I mean, it's just all data. And so I definitely think the sorts of experiences I'm talking about, those alone would not make me a Christian. They would not keep me as a Christian alone, I would say. And I didn't fully know what to make of some of these experiences until I did more research into like miracles and comparative studies with other religions, which is something I did actually much more recently. A lot of my podcast appearances and things like that have been about miracles. So I probably will talk about that later in this series. But yeah, that's sort of, I just wanted to comment on that. So yeah, just to kind of jump back now. Sorry with this, yeah, fragile faith. I started with this very intense feeling that the Bible needed to be perfect, because if it's not perfect, then the house of cards falls. And I would nibble at it during college, these questions, but as we all know, college is a busy time. I was a computer science major at Georgia Tech. I spent 3.5 years as a computer science major at Georgia Tech and 3 years as a piano composition and performance major at Georgia State, which was nearby. I didn't do them in solid 3 year chunks. I did 1 year at Georgia Tech, 3 years at Georgia State, 2.5 years at Georgia Tech, and graduated in computer science. So I had kind of a crazy college career, a very busy college career, multiple summers. And so I enjoyed this stuff, and I started listening to podcasts around this time related to apologetics and stuff, but It's just hard to really have the time to dig deeply. And I was trying to stay sane too. So certain things would make me doubt or whatever. And I would have to deal with that. And I always wanted to believe in the truth. But yeah, you just don't have that much time to dig in necessarily. And it's as we all, anyone who's been in the space knows how complicated it gets. Where I mean, we're dealing with such a huge worldview question, and there's so many variables to look at, arguably, So, yeah, just maybe a few things that are worth commenting on before I get to when I really started to dig in during that during the later period of college. I was very suspicious of simply being sure of any belief from a young age for various reasons. So I've always been suspicious of that. I've always been suspicious of just going with the flow as far as what other people are saying. Yeah, I mean, just to put it succinctly, like I would say I'm pretty naturally skeptical. I've seen the damage even relationally to being too sure of yourself. And so that left a deep, deep impression on me of how damaging it is to lock up your beliefs, whatever beliefs we're talking about, and not question them, and not question the same way you question other people's beliefs. And once again, of any sort of type, definitely worldview things, but also about your own personality and stuff like that. This was a period where I started deconstructing my own personality and really trying to face the ugly parts in myself, and seeing the fruits of that made me even more committed to doing it to my own faith, ultimately. One moment that also made me want to question more was meeting some Catholic friends, and I remember just having this moment of like sensing how at least one of them seemed very locked up in their beliefs, where they couldn't even question Catholicism. And I felt very lucky that I felt very free to question anything, at least within Christianity. I felt very much like, look, I'll believe in Catholicism if it makes the most sense, but I'm going to believe in, my version of Protestantism if that makes the most sense. I just felt utter freedom to believe whatever strand of Christianity seemed the most logical to me. And I dearly wanted to have that freedom about my overall worldview too. And so yeah, I just saw how important that is. And it's the only way to get free. And this was also maybe the start of me becoming a common sense epistemologist, as my moniker sometimes has been online, because I started to realize you can design these intricate arguments to suit any complex belief system. And really clever people design these very clever arguments that take hours, days, even weeks to figure out where the flaw is, but someone on the outside, in a more common sense way, is not convinced. And what I just summed up right now is actually John Loftus's outsider test. John Loftus is an atheist. I already mentioned him once, and he wrote a book called The Outsider Test of Faith, which I've read. And overall, I really remember enjoying it and just it very resonating with me for this exact reason that there's so much machinery and intricacy to these complex arguments that it can be hard to get around that, and kind of zoom out and be a little bit more commonsensical. And it's always tough because, of course, you have to deal with the arguments. And of course, superficial common sense can be wrong. I encourage anyone who's interested in this sort of thing, and interested in my exact epistemology to go through my epistemology videos, and I try to build up what I mean by sort of this intuitionism and common sense, because it's way more found it's way it has more depth to it than it sounds. It's not just common sense in a superficial way. It's not just intuition in a superficial gut way. It's in a way that helps us not trick ourselves with overly intricate arguments where we're using words in ways that are ill-defined and that allow slippage and allow us to convince ourselves of what we want. I was had a very heightened awareness of how easy it is to trick ourselves. And so I just knew I didn't want to do that with Christianity. Now, you're always stuck with this conundrum of is it wrong to doubt? Like, or if I have a relationship with Jesus, isn't that good enough? Like, if it feels very real, that relationship, and I don't feel like it's like disproven intellectually, then is it sort of like a sin to question? You get in all these conundrums, and especially when coming from fundamentalism, some people will pretty much tell you it is a sin, to like doubt in those ways. Luckily, I would say most of the key people around me did not make me feel like it was a sin. My mom was actually a really key person, in that she encouraged me to keep questioning, and she's a very deep Christian woman, and I remember one time when I was going through the major doubts later in college, and I was talking to her, and she just stopped me at one point, and she was like, "Robert, you need to actually believe it's true. Like you can't convince yourself of like, I think it could be true, but like it, I like you can't out of fear of like going to hell or fear that, you out of sort of emotional reasons, in the end, you actually think you need to think it's true. Otherwise, it's not gonna stick, And one other thing I want to add to that is I remember being in a Bible study my freshman or sophomore year, and somehow it came up the idea of would we if we all died. And atheism was true, let's say. And somehow, magically, let's say, for a split second, we could evaluate our lives. Would we still be glad that we lived our lives as Christians, even though atheism was true? And I was the only one in the circle that was like, hell no. Like, I want to believe the truth. And I've softened on this a little bit. Like, I get the practical value of some of this stuff, but kind of like I said in the last video, I still want to believe what's true. And I would much rather just state honestly that Christianity is not true, but if you sort of live your life around the principles of it, you get these benefits. But let's not pretend that it's actually true. Like, just go ahead and say that. Don't actually say that it is true if it isn't. So that is sort of where my starting point was, and which is why I had so much anxiety around this question, because I was not going to go away silently into just silently believing for the rest of my life. It was going to nag at me. It was going to nag at me no matter what. And that's what kept getting me here and there after, reading something, after hearing a comment by a skeptic, after a science article that made me question creationism and evolution. It would bug me, and I would look into it a little bit more, but I hadn't done a deep dive yet. I had done somewhat deep dives into age of the earth stuff and evolution stuff when I was younger. And I mean, some of that was when I was still looking at pretty intense creationist literature. That is another key thing I should bring up. I felt lied to by creationism, and that cannot be overstated. Like, I felt lied to by Ken Ham, basically. And that is extremely damaging, to feel that way. And that leaves a very deep impression. I mean, that gives this intense fear of what else have I been lied to about? Like, here is this organization and this thing that, my parents and other people are presenting to me, and that at first blush, if you're not familiar with counter arguments or whatever, especially when you're younger, at first blush, it sounds so convincing and stuff, but then you find out it is a house of cards. And that is, wow, that is a defining moment for a person's intellect. It also is a defining moment to read an entire book arguing for a position and it sounding, super convincing, and then find out that it's all false, or that there is at least as good an argument on the other side. Whenever that sort of thing happens, that fundamentally changes how you analyze data from then on for the rest of your life. You just realize how complicated things can get. And this is one reason I fell in love with debate, because I can't overstate how huge it is that in a debate, if both people are quality people for their respective sides, then they can only get away with so much BSing because the other side is going to call them on that. But if you go read one of their books, they can really twist things a lot. They can, and a lot of times it's not, there's many ways to twist material. One of it is simply omission. So a lot of what they can say can be upstanding and they're not really, deceiving, but they're really leaving out huge chunks, which ultimately does end up being deception, deceptive. So it's just a fundamentally different experience reading The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, which I've read twice now. And I did a long series of blog posts on. There's a fundamental difference between that and hearing Richard Dawkins in a serious debate with a Christian intellectual. And same for the other side. A huge difference between reading a Ken Ham book and then hearing him in debate. And so that is the sort of the mental context I was in. And yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any other key things about sort of where I was at. I think that mostly covers it. So one of the key things that started to get me was doubts about my own salvation. That helped kickstart my journey into questioning things. Basically, one of the key moments was, I think, a sermon. No, it wasn't even a sermon. It was someone making a comment about, I think, Hebrews. It's definitely Hebrews, but I think it's Hebrews 6, where it talks about how you can like lose your salvation and stuff. And I always had great anxiety about that. I would be afraid of that I blasphemed the Holy Spirit as a kid. This is almost embarrassing to admit, but like I spent what seems like a year or two convinced I was going to hell as a kid because I like the thought the Holy Spirit is bad popped into my mind when I read the Bible. I was reading the Bible on my own and I read about blaspheming the Holy Spirit and how it's unforgivable. And of course, the first thing that comes to my mind is the phrase, the Holy Spirit is bad, of course, and I was like, that's it. I've done it. I've done it. And I went into my room and cried. And so, yeah, that's always been a fear of mine is like going to hell and what if you accidentally screw it up? And I just want to say I'm well aware of how all of this is sounding. And in so many ways, I have the mind of someone and I can't convince you of this, but I have the mind of someone who has left Christianity. And what I mean by that is someone I genuinely feel like I intellectually stepped outside of Christianity, at least for a while. And I never lost that burst. I burst the bubble, and you can't ever fully get the bubble back, And so, I see how that shapes you when you have this intense fear of hell, and it's just it rocks your world that way, and all the manipulation and stuff like that. And I want to also honor the idea that at least at a superficial level, those count against Christianity. The fact that I sat in my room and for a year or two was worried about going to hell, that seems to prima facie count against Christianity, and I think it does. Now, in the end, I think it counts against a specific form of Christianity, a sort of fundamentalist Christianity. And I'm reading comments that Jesus said that probably weren't meant for me anyway. He was speaking at a certain time to certain people, and blaspheming had a certain meaning. So like, I think once you dig in, the prima facie evidence against Christianity goes away. But I just want to acknowledge the damage and the evil that is that sort of fear that skeptics will immediately say, well, look, this is what religion does. It makes this poor 11-year-old kid afraid of hell, And I really want to acknowledge that. And Christianity needs to either explain that or overcome it or show that that's not really it to it needs to address that. So I just kind of want to acknowledge that. So what kind of happened next was so right, I was talking about the Hebrews thing. I'm gonna go slightly past 20 minutes just to kind of get started here with the next section. Yeah, basically it brought this floodgates back of like, what if I have like lost my salvation for not any good reason, but like I said, I have freaking OCD anyway. I had a kind of strange childhood, so it was not hard for me to have anxiety. And we're talking about the most important thing possible, which is your existence for eternity. And what's on the line is potential torture forever. So it's not hard to go into this crazy anxious state. I, in some ways though, or not in some ways, that I have to give credit that that made me say, is this all true? Because I couldn't survive on my childhood faith anymore, because my childhood faith was brittle and it was in danger of making me be afraid, deathly afraid of hell. And it was time to just start digging more and more. That's when I started, and then it just yeah, then I just kind of it became a snowball a little bit. And I think I will leave it there. I want to apologize that in some ways it feels like I keep kind of leading up to like the main period of questioning, but I think these ideas are so important so you understand what my psychology was leading up to this. And I will pick it up right there. So thank you very much for listening.